It's a financial deal, yes, yes, and the markets are mulling it over and will trade on it all day today. But that European summit in Brussels may also be the most direct discussion of what constitutes sovereignty in a century or since the creation of the United Nations. Certainly, it's the most important exploration of what sovereignty means in the 21st century. 23 European countries, including all in the Eurozone, agreed late last night to sign a treaty that would require them to enforce stricter financial regulations. The talks fell short of getting all 27 EU countries on board, including Britain, that actually walked out of the deal and constituted one of the big headlines this morning. The details of the agreement are due out later today, but joining us this morning to discuss what's going on in Brussels is Stephen Erlanger, Paris Bureau Chief for our partner, The New York Times. Also, Jonathan Tepper is with us, Chief Editor of Variant Perception. It's an economics research firm. Good morning to both of you. Stephen, you know, yesterday you talked a little bit about the long process of creating the Eurozone and the history that really motivates this process that we're seeing. I think it's easy to be cynical in these financial deals that don't get anywhere, but I have to say this morning, I feel some admiration for what these European leaders are actually doing. It's very challenging stuff, Stephen.
Well, it is challenging and it's technical, but it's serious. I mean, it's not debates about, you know, social issues. It's not debates about religion. It's debates about the key issues of what citizens deserve, what they want, how to talk to them, how to share sovereignty. And it is important. I mean, Europe after the war is a great experiment. It hasn't finished.
And a great experiment. And what part of that experiment is going to be, at least in theory, and tell me if I'm wrong here, that a nation, say France, might pass a spending bill in Paris, and that bill would have to be reviewed based on criteria that are being worked out in this Eurozone treaty. Yes?
Yes. I mean, and all the nations that sign on to this deal would have to have their national budgets, their annual budgets, and their statistics surveyed by a central authority, probably by the Brussels Commission experts. And if they seem to break the rules, they can be sent back to parliaments. And if rules are broken and limits are exceeded, there are supposed to be some kind of automaticity in sanctioning those states.
Interesting. Stephen Erlanger, Paris Bureau Chief for our partner, The New York Times, right in the middle of all the hubbub in Brussels as the details of this agreement worked out in the early morning hours are going to be revealed later on today. Jonathan Tepper, Chief Editor of Variant Perception in London. The UK walks out of the deal. Is this domestic politics for David Cameron or good economic sense?
Well, the UK is not part of the it's part of the EU, but not part of the euro itself, the euro area, and so therefore it doesn't make sense for the UK necessarily to sign on to treaty changes that really have to do with fiscal management of countries that essentially would like greater support from Germany and from the ECB. So clearly it's partly driven by political considerations, but obviously it's economic. They're not really part of the euro.
Because the UK isn't part of the euro in the way that you state, is there, as this develops, this process develops, an irresistible incentive for London to stay out because it essentially becomes a sort of offshore, literally offshore, less regulated market and an alternative to the eurozone, and would draw financial business actually to London?
Well, I mean, it already does that, and everyone thought when the euro was introduced that the banking would move to Frankfurt. It didn't do that. It stayed in London. People work in New York and Silicon Valley and London because these are sort of centers where, there is sort of industry or capital, and it's very difficult, I think, to sort of create an ecosystem anywhere else. So nothing's going to change. I mean, London is what it is, and it will stay that way. Obviously, they are very much against a sort of Tobin tax, and there are certain things they don't like about some of the proposals, but, I think London's done very well for itself on its own, and I think they'll stay that way.
Jonathan, let me just, the Tobin tax is the financial transaction tax that you referred to there. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, sorry. So, sort of using technical terms. Yeah. So, I mean, essentially, there are elements that European governments are putting forward that the London government doesn't like and sees obviously as a damaging to sort of banking and trading in London. But I mean, ultimately, this is a problem that has to do with the euro itself and how to bail out peripheral members that face either insolvency or illiquidity. And insolvency obviously is if you're incapable of paying your debts at all. Liquidity is when, you know, you might be ultimately solvent and be able to generate cash flow, but in the short run you have trouble rolling over your debt.
Indeed, and that's the insolvency situation is Greece, and the liquidity problem is more Italy. That's Jonathan Tepper, chief editor of Variant Perception. Stephen Erlanger, before we go, what is the view from Brussels on the motivation of the UK decision to stay out of this for now? Does Europe seem to need the money and the financial power of London?
That was never the issue. It's about British domestic politics. David Cameron has stepped into it. He gave them a dare, they called it, and he failed. And Britain is now more isolated in Europe than ever since it joined the EU. And I think this will be a big problem for Britain, and it's a big problem in the end for the idea of unity. This treaty was not going to tell Britain what to do. It really governed the Eurozone. But if it were adopted by everyone, it would have been a sign of solidarity. And he is, you know, simply saying that the city was at risk. I don't believe the city was at risk. I think he played a political game and for the moment lost it. And it will be expensive.
Stephen Erlanger, what's the next procedural step here?
Well, the countries have to actually draft this thing, though Germany and France have made a beginning, but there are technical issues to be worked out about who exactly has the legal right to look into things and how it's all going to work. They hope to finish that drafting by the end of March and get it through parliaments. In a way, it's a good thing because it just moves much faster, and the markets want speed. The markets want a sense of confidence that the Eurozone in particular is serious about fixing itself and supporting its vulnerable members. This answers part of the first question. They're having a little more trouble with the second one.
Indeed. Thanks, Stephen Erlanger, Paris Bureau Chief for our partner, The New York Times, from Brussels. Thanks, Stephen. And also Jonathan Tepper, Chief Editor of Variant Perception, an economics research firm. The future of the Eurozone, an agreement reached early this morning.